Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 758. It's the 13th of April, 2014, and it's another busy one. It's because of the short week. All the companies are trying to get on. I have on the podcast today Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, ASD, talks about achieving a massive milestone for the company, first gas at their project in Slovenia. I also have Bobo Kuti, CEO of Sirius Petroleum, that's SRSP, and Bobo talks about their offshore service vessel contract with Tidewater Marine and also their new COO appointment. Plus, Michael Masterman, CEO of Saffron Energy, SRON, discusses their final approval for first gas at their Bezzecca field in Italy. Also, Gio Andretti, CEO of Wide Sales Group, WTC, explains what the proceeds of their recent fundraise will go towards. I also have a man with a massive brain over macro and micro. Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Hornby, Central Asia Metals, and Filter. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Cadence, that's KDNC, and Feedback. I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox in the last 24 hours, plus who to follow. It's a CEO of a company I interview on the podcast today. He's on the Vox Markets platform, and he's quite active, so worth following and maybe having a chat with him. I'll cover that in a bit.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, AST. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. It's great to be back again.
Yes. Well, listen, as you're the number one most followed company on Vox, I'll spare you the problem, the burden there, the burden of describing the company, because I think a lot of people know what you do there. But you've had some news out, hot news. It's so hot, I haven't actually read it all yet. So can you take us through what the news is, please, Cole, for the listeners as well?
Yeah, Justin, I'm talking to you this morning from Lendava. I'm here at the field, and the news this morning is that we're finally flowing gas from PG10 through the CPP and onto our customers. So at long last, we're producing gas.
Well, that's good news, and because I know a lot of people are expecting this. So that's happening right now as we speak?
As we speak, yeah. We tested things yesterday, and gas has been flowing now this morning. So it's very exciting. And I'll send you a few photographs of the equipment that we've all installed in the wellhead. Everything's in progress.
And have you got any figures around how much is flowing, or what you expect to get, or when you expect to get revenue from this?
We'll get revenue. There'll be an invoice at the end of this month, and we'll receive the revenue then. Subsequent months are normal, conventional sort of 30-day payment terms. We're not releasing figures on how much we're selling and what we're getting for this initial sort of production, which is going through, it's being sold through Geo Energo, one of our partners. The degree of commercial sensitivity locally about figures, about the exact quantities and pricing on this. Once we start flowing gas to ENA, which we're hoping to do in June, then we'll release sort of forecasts and estimates for what we're going to receive for that one.
But this is a milestone here, isn't it, now? Because you are now sort of revenue producing, and it's been a long journey to get here, so it must be quite a proud moment for you, Colin, isn't it?
It's fantastic. I mean, company's been in Slovenia for around 10 years now, working on this project, and I've personally been with the company for over 4 years now. So it's fantastic at long last to see the well producing, to see some revenue coming in, and I think it's been great to change the sort of the attitude and the mindset of people that for a long time we've been sort of pushing, trying to get permits, trying to get planning, trying to get everything ready, and to finally have the well in production, and to be looking forward now to get our second well into production, and to be looking forward to increasing production and selling gas through to ENA is very exciting.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. You've covered it. So what's next? But you've just covered that. So, when you go from sort of a company that's an explorer to producer, it changes the dynamics and it gives you a lot more options, doesn't it? When you've got revenue coming in.
It does, and we can see that the next step will be to get PG11A up and running. We're going to start that work later this month. I've got the drilling manager arriving next week, and we'll get the rig moved before the end of April. And that work, around 4 weeks they're estimating, so sometime maybe 48 weeks given the unpredictability of some of these well operations, but certainly by June we should have PG11A up and running. Then we'll open up the route to ENA. That makes the company cash flow positive. That then gives you a huge amount of options because you're a stable company, you're making money, and you can really then plan forward. And we'll be pursuing, hopefully getting the IPPC permit, building our own processing plant, looking at new wells, looking at recompleting some of the old existing wells, and looking at other things in the concession area. So it's a very exciting time for the company.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I mean, I was talking to, I think it was John Mayer, a mining analyst at SP Angel, and in fact, it's another company, and they were saying the percentage of companies that go from actually being explorers through to develop their wells to producing is so small. It's like low. It's like 2 or 3%. Only manage it to go from explorer to producer. So you've done that, and people are following the journey, and it's evidence on Vox, because obviously your following numbers have gone through the roof because they've seen you've been doing what you're saying, and you are now a producer. So it must be very satisfying. Anyone else, Colin, who's now just about convinced that you are you're going to do what you say you're going to do, could you give us those three reasons, please, Cole, why someone should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, I mean, the three reasons to follow Ascent now, I guess, are we're now producing gas. We've delivered on what we said we were going to do, and we're producing gas. Coming up very soon, we've got another well that we're going to bring on, and that will increase the potential volumes and prove up another part of the reservoir. And then finally, I guess, we've got a contract with ENA, which we'll hopefully start producing through to in June. That makes the company cash flow positive, and that opens up a sort of a host of other options for us going forward.
Colin, it sounds like you have birds on your shoulders. Even the birds are happy. They're singing away.
It's a beautiful sunny day here in Llandovo. It's lovely.
Yeah, you're like still white out there. Everyone's happy. Even the animals are happy out there. Marvellous, Colin. Good to speak to you, fella. And look forward to speaking to you again very soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin. Cheers. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bobo Kuti, CEO of Sirius Petroleum. It's SRSP. Bobo, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Now, just as a brief summary, we'll get to some news you've released. It's very important news, and I'm sure that'll excite shareholders. But before we get to that, can you give us a brief summary as to what you're all about at Sirius, please, Bobo?
Yeah, sure. Sirius Petroleum is a company focused on developing proven offshore fields in Nigeria. These are assets that have previously drilled wells by the majors, and they have beneficial fiscal regimes in Nigeria.
Excellent stuff. Okay, as regards the RNS released today, can you tell me, Bobby, outline what's in the RNS, because, of course, just been released, hot off the press. But first and foremost, what's the significance of this partner in the consortium there?
Sure. So Tidewater adds another dimension to the consortium as the world's leading provider of offshore support vessels in the oil industry. I mean, it has over 50 years of experience providing marine support services to oil companies. And that ties in very nicely with our offshore asset, the Aurora field. So it's a great new addition to the consortium, and they approach us to get involved in line with other project partners.
I see. And also worth noting, Tidewater, they're listed in New York, currently in negotiations with its financial backers on its covenants. What's the situation here, Bobo?
Yeah, so these are challenges that the industry has been facing in the last few years. And so it's completely common for restructuring to be taking place. But, we are completely aware of this process, and confident agreement will be made.
Okay, all right. And we mustn't miss the other bit of important news. Recently appointed a new chief operating officer. That's Peter Gregory. Could you give us a bit of background on Peter, please, Bobo?
Yeah, we're excited to have a man with his experience on board. He's worked all over the world and has direct experience operating in West Africa, which is great, and you know, for great companies like BG, Premier Oil, and Lasmo. So we went through a process, and he was the right man for the job and our strategy. So we're extremely happy and excited to have him on board.
Excellent stuff. And as far as Sirius is concerned now, what you know, investors or people looking to do a bit of research, what's the next kind of milestones, bits of news we can expect from you guys?
Operations on this field will commence in H1 this year, and then first oil will be received following that.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, Bobo, listen, every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. So if people are listening right now, and they like the news you've released recently and the potential going forward, and they're not following you, could you give them three quick reasons as to why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yeah, we have a quality asset, which we are developing to achieve first oil later this year. We've achieved world-class consortium partnership in order to develop these assets. And we're operating in a prolific hydrocarbon basin, which have loads of other multiple assets to potentially farm into. So there's huge potential for growth.
Bobo, good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again very soon. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Saffron Energy, Michael Masterman. Michael, thanks for joining me.
Justin, great to be on your podcast.
Yeah, well, it's always nice to have you on. I know you're a man of many hats here, but today we're talking about Saffron Energy, like you are the CEO of that, and you've had a bit of news out today. But what I always like to do, because you're quite new as a company, Saffron, can you give people a quick summary as to what you're all about, please, Michael?
Okay, so Saffron Energy has natural gas fields in northern Italy. Its first gas field, Solaro, is up and running. And yesterday we got full ministry authorization to commence production from our second gas field, Bezeka. And we're gearing up literally as we speak to start production from the Bezeka natural gas field. So that's a big positive development for the company.
And are these, I assume right now, these are, like you said, you've got Solaro happening at the moment, and you've got Bezeka happening. So these are now, or Solaro is that revenue generating at them as we speak?
So Solaro is kicking out revenue as we speak. Following ministry authorisation yesterday, we can now proceed to turn on the Bezeka gas field. That'll take 3 or 4 days of commissioning. And as we commission the plant, we'll move into commercial sales to Shell and start receiving the revenue from the Bezeka field. Now, the Bezeka field, we're currently producing about 10,000 cubic metres a day from Solaro, which is a relatively modest amount. Mm-hmm. We're expecting Bezeka to add an additional 30 to 40,000 cubic metres a day of production, and that will significantly boost the cash flows and revenues of Saffron Energy. So, okay. Important step.
Yeah.
We've got important commissioning and production mechanics to manage over the next week, but we'll be able to give the market a great update in terms of where we are in the next week, the following week.
Yeah, and you also say that to get in people's heads, you've got Solaro, you've got Bezeka, and South Saint Alberto. So that's in near term as well, isn't it? How far is that away?
Yeah. So Saint Alberto, we're busily working away to get that in production by the end of the year. So Solaro's up and running, Bezeka's just about to start, and Saint Alberto, we're working on getting that into production by the end of 2017. So we're looking at three gas fields up and running, generating revenue and profits in 2017.
And do we know the size of and the amount you hope to produce from Saint Alberto?
We're looking at 25,000 cubic metres a day.
Excellent stuff.
So,
yeah. It's all going well. And how is and like I say, you got Shell there as a buyer there, and is that for all three fields?
Yeah, so they cover all our fields and take all our offtake. So they're very, very good customer to have. And because our gas fields are located in the centre of Italy, right on the pipeline network, we get the full wholesale price at the wellhead. So we get high prices for our very pure natural gas production.
Excellent stuff. And I'm looking now, you're on about just under a sub 15 million market cap, and just around eight and a bit pence. And what did you float at, Michael?
The IPO was at 5 pence. So we've had a good run to eight and a half. Lots more news and a lot more development to come. So we're looking forward to a very good 2017.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Michael, listen, you know what happens here with Vox Markets. People go on the page there and they'll see a big follow button on your page. So give us three quick summary points now as to why someone should hit that follow button on Safran Energy's page, please. And that's, by the way, S-R-O-N.
We've got three reasons. We've got revenue and cash flow, and that revenue and cash flow is going to increase significantly through 2017 as we bring Bezeka on production over the next couple of weeks and as we bring Sant'Alberto on in the back end of the year. Secondly, we've got very good assets in one of the best places to produce and sell natural gas, which is central Italy. And thirdly, I think everybody will have seen we've got a track record of getting these projects into production quickly and delivering for shareholders' expectations.
Excellent, Michael. Good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again very soon.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joe Andretti, CEO of Wide Cells. That's WDC. Joe, thanks for joining me again.
Hi, Justin. Thank you very much. I'm extremely excited today about the news flow.
Yes, well, you've got some news out. But like as always, listen, we've got new listeners all the time. And people may not be aware of you because you're a relatively new company. So summarise, if you could, Joe. I mean, you've got several streams to the business. But summarise what Wide Cells is all about, please.
Well, our White Cells Group mission is to make stem cell treatments accessible and affordable. And for that, we have been focused on providing stem cell services and also groundbreaking insurance for stem cell treatments because stem cell treatments are within the highest priced treatments in the medical marketplace. There are around 3 million people all over the world that have already paid to store their stem cells from their baby's umbilical cord blood, and they do not have an insurance to cover the costs associated with stem cell treatments. We have developed that on a global scope. Our coverage includes goes up to 1 million euros in Europe, $1 million outside Europe. We also have developed an expert medical opinion service to help and provide the right diagnosis and treatment plans for patients all over the world, and then provide access to the best medical teams and, again, the best treatment centers as well. We also support stem cell research. We've been establishing our own laboratory facility at the University of Manchester Innovation Center, which is developing quite well. It should be licensed next month, so we'll start the research the research project, and also start to provide individuals and families in the UK the possibility of storing their baby's umbilical cord blood with us. So that's the in a nutshell what White Cells does. We've since the IPO in July last year, we've managed to complete everything that we've said we were going to do. Some things ahead of schedule, such as Wide Academy, for example. But we also brought some very interesting opportunities to the table. And if we are today discussing these new placements, it's because we have opportunity to accelerate our growth and also to tap into new opportunities.
Yeah, excellent. So in a summary, essentially, three sort of divisions, aren't there? There's Wide Cells itself, which is the storage and research there at Manchester University. There's a cell plan, which helps people pay for this kind of storage and all that. And then also the educational side, Wide Academy. Is that correct?
Yes. So it's a complete end-to-end services solution from stem cells storage to stem cell treatments, and helping in between to educate the healthcare community And provide the right medical information to patients as well.
Yeah, it's quite cutting edge. Now, you've yesterday you announced you've raised around £650,000 gross. Tell us, you know, who's investing and what will the money be used for, please, Joe?
Well, we have some of our existing investors that have either followed their money or increased their position. Perhaps one of the most relevant, if not the most relevant one, would be Gervais Williams from Mighton Group, mm-hmm. that have increased their position to just below 10%. So we are also excited to have new investors on board now that have been following the story and saw that we have accomplished everything that we said we are going to do, and again with new opportunities for accelerated growth, and so we are really excited about this fundraise. Now, with regards to the use of proceeds, within the cell plan division, where we have the stem cell insurance plan, we've experienced more demand from corporate banks that have the stem cells stored. And we've experienced more demand from corporate banks that are spread all across the world, so almost from all continents. And because we have these high demands, and we are the only company in the world at the moment that is able to provide a global stem cell insurance plan, covering all the costs associated with stem cell treatments, we want to get the products out there to more and more families that have already paid to store the stem cells and do not have an insurance for treatment. So collectively, we have around 175,000 samples as a potential market within the corporate banks that have already applied to offer cell plan to their existing clients and to new clients as well. What we are doing at the moment is conducting quality assessment, which is critical for us. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that when we are offering an insurance policy, that family has the trust that they have stored the stem cells in the best stem cell storage facility possible, which means we'll be able to take a claim in the future. So for that reason, we are conducting the quality assessment, and that's more of a potential market size for 2017 that we were expecting, and we are still in April. And we were targeting perhaps 90 to 100,000 potential clients this year with around 5 to 10% penetration rate. And with this increased potential market size, we are also now developing the platform that will allow us to roll out the products outside Europe as well and scale up the business more quickly. Now, that's with CellPlan. On the Wide Academy division, which is the education and training in stem cell technology to healthcare professionals and also to clients, we've been, again, very fortunate to have appointed Alan Greenberg, the former director of Apple Education, to spearhead the Wide Academy division. We've been in conversations with some of the largest technology companies in the world. And the reason for that is we were already preparing the plan for these new placements. And with these funds, we'll be able to develop a web app platform and to start entering contracts with leading technology companies that have channels with the potential to reach millions of people. So what we'll be doing is curating content in stem cell technology. Again, for healthcare professionals, it's what will be paid content and freemium content for patients that want to know more about stem cells and about our services as well. So we want to have that curated content and disseminate it into channels that are untaped and no one has communicated through those channels up until now. And we strongly believe that that's going to help our positioning, but at the same time, disseminate information about our services so that more people can benefit from the solutions we have developed.
Yes, and with all these developments progressing here, when do you expect to start generating cash from this, Joe?
Yeah, so if cell plan is the the research project has already to start generating revenues since December last year. It's a £100,000 contract, and again, there's a new opportunities on the table for contract research. A small portion of our funds is to develop those partnerships as well. But the next steps are really starting to generate revenues from cell plan. And that's we were planning now the launch in the UK. We are almost at the point where the product will start to be offered in the UK to clients that have stored stem cells with a corporate bank, our partner BioVault. They have around 25,000 samples in their inventory, and that will be our first product launch. And then we want to roll out to other European countries this year, and also outside Europe towards the end of the year. So this first semester, we'll already start to see revenues being generated from cell plan, and the half year results will show that. In terms of white cells, we are expecting to receive the license from the Human Tissue Authority in the next month or so, and that will allow us to start the research project. And also start to generate revenues from offering stem cell storage services to families in the UK that are looking to store their baby's umbilical cord blood to protect the family against blood diseases and disorders. In terms of White Academy, it's really focusing on the partnerships that we are building at the moment, and some big names are going to appear there.
Excellent stuff. Well, Joe, it all seems to be progressing well there. And for people liking this, because it's quite a cutting edge, isn't it, sector you're in there, and you're treading a blaze there. So for people listening right now, they think, oh, I like the sound of this. There's definitely future potential, but they're not following you on Vox Markets. Could you give them three reasons why? Should they hit that follow button, Joe?
Well, our company is extremely innovative because we are the first company in the world that is able to provide a family the possibility of storing their stem cells to protect against future illnesses in the future. We have an expert medical opinion service that can help to provide them the right diagnosis and treatment plan and point the patient in the right direction. But not only that, we'll also be able to cover all the costs associated with treatments by providing coverage of up to €1 million or $1 million. So we, as I like to say, it's a process from A to Z, from stem cell storage to stem cell treatments. So we are diverse because we have these three synergistic divisions all able to generate multiple revenue streams. And there's a recognized demand. There are already 3 million people that pay to store the stem cells and do not have an insurance for treatment. And the stem cell industry is a $100 billion marketplace. Sometimes I hear this concept that the stem cell industry is a niche market. Well, I disagree with that statement, because a $100 billion dollar market is not a niche market anymore, and this market is expected to grow to $170 billion by 2020, and we are part of that and part of driving that as well.
Excellent. Joe, thanks for talking to us, and hopefully speak again very soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Justin. Thank you. Have a great day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
I'm good.
You're sounding better than you did last week, anyway.
I'm still hanging in there, Russ. You know, I'm still. I don't like to mention it, but I'm still soldiering on. You know, as you do.
Good.
But listen, now we've got 4 days away from the market. Soon, I don't know if I'll survive. Part of me is looking forward to it.
I'm never away from the markets. Although, as Warren Buffett always used to say, if you enjoy switching your screen off on Saturday and Sunday, try it as well on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. So basically saying, so you don't overtrade, was his message. Not that so you nod off, but so that you don't overtrade. So
yeah, but apparently he doesn't have even a computer in his office.
I don't think he does. No, I think he goes through the report and accounts with a pen and paper, which frankly, you know, he's going through them very thoroughly, and his record's pretty good. So
yeah, it is. And I heard somewhere that you can tell within a couple of minutes whether a company's worth investing in or not by looking at the reports. And, you know, he's got obviously a system that he uses, and it seems be working quite well for him.
Yeah, I'd imagine you look at the cash flow first, the balance sheet second, and the P&L third, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so what stocks are we looking at today, Russ?
Uh, th- today's three against the field are Hornby, and then we'll do an update on Central Asia Metals, and then we'll finish off with Filter, which is a relative market newbie.
Okay, now Hornby, a cracking name. It's a well, it's so famous. I mean, you know, the brand there, but do you think in this day and age now, the kids are on PlayStations and what are Xboxes and iPads, is there room for Hornby in the world? I don't even know what they do anymore, really.
I think that is the perfect question to ask. I mean, they've got some very evocative names for, you know, blokes like us of a certain generation. Hornby, Corgi, Scalextric, Airfix. They've had some fantastic licensing deals in the past with everybody from Star Wars to Moshi Monsters, but in the last 4 or 5 years they've not been able to turn it into profit. And on a sort of stated basis, they've basically made, you know, losses or break even for the last 3 or 4 years. They're forecast to make a loss again in the year that's just begun. But there was a trading statement last week, and it sort of caught everybody's attention for two reasons. First, the shares bounced after it because, if you'll pardon the pun, the company said it was on track as far as its turnaround plans were concerned. And there's been a big change there. They've been on-sourcing operations from Europe into the UK. They've cut the product range. They've brought out new catalogues. They've cut inventory. And best of all, they've cut debt from 6.4 to £2.7 million. And that's always a good thing, because less debt means less risk. Less risk can mean a higher equity valuation, and that's why the shares popped. I mean, the statement itself was no work of art. They're forecasting full-year revenues for March 17 down 20 to 25%. But again, that was in line, which shows you how low expectations were. Mm. They've sold the headquarters in Margate for just over £2 million, and they're moving that to Sandwich further along in Kent. And Chairman Roger Canham did forecast lower losses in the year to March 2018. So it does, on the face of it, look like it is turning around. But as you've said, the recent history is littered with multiple profit warnings. I think there's been five in the last 2 or 3 years, two cash calls. And the key question is, even if they're fixing some of these short-term problems as supply chain and product range, in the end, is the Xbox generation really going to want to play? And I think that's the massive question. You've got a business that's going to generate £45 million of sales this year, exactly the same as it did a decade ago, and then it was profitable, and now it's making a loss. Mm. So that's the first question you've got to ask yourself. The second is the management team the right team to have in? And two shareholders have actually called for the removal of Chairman Roger Canham. So this is a story that's going to run. He's been in since May 2013, but he's also the chairman of Phoenix Asset Management, who own a third of the stock. So they're suggesting maybe that's a relationship that needs to be, you know, looked at afresh. We've got the annual general meeting coming up in May. So let's see if these two shareholders kick up a really big fuss and try and do something about it. What we've got is a company with a market cap of 28 million, debt of call it 3. So the enterprise value is 31 with a £45 million sales base. In the past, it's been capable of making double-digit operating margins. If you think it can do that again, dirt cheap stock.
Yeah, but you've asked
the big question is, are these problems not cyclical or temporary, but structural and permanent because of the way the kids of today, without wishing to sound like an old fogey, entertain themselves by getting plugged into something electronic?
Yeah, but I look at the chart from February last year, you can draw a ruler pretty much around about 28 pence, 30 pence, and it's bouncing along off that, you know, up to 40 pence, and then down to that again, a nice support level there. But you'd think maybe they have got this core sales they're always going to generate. You know, there's always a market there for them. They're never going to be a massive growth player, are they, really? But if they can cut away, like you say, all the dead wood and the overheads and reduce the debt, maybe it will help the stock. Because, like I said,
with a market cap of 28 million quid, it isn't going to take a big operating margin to make the stock look really, really cheap, even on a £45 million sales base. Yeah. And there clearly is a core element there, even if they're probably the dads rather than the sons right now. Yeah. You know, and I guess that's the... But so short term, I think there probably is that core there, which you could still turn into decent profit, decent cash. The company did pay dividends in the past. It lasted it in 2011 when it was about 3.7p. And again, if you offered somebody 3.7p dividend on the current share price of 28p, they'd probably snap your hand off. Mm. So it does show what could happen. But again, it's what's the long-term picture? And as you say, if you draw the chart further back, I mean, it's so ugly, even a mother couldn't love it. I mean, it really is top left down to bottom right.
Yeah.
But as you say, at the minute, there's that flatlining share price, something's going to happen. It's going to go one way or the other, and it's going to be fascinating to find out which.
Yeah, but you know, one of the problems they don't have is, like I said, sales at 45 million. You're thinking, come on, guys, you should be able to do something here with that. At least they're selling stuff. It's not as if their product isn't selling. They are selling it, but they can't generate some kind of profit. So we'll see. It's interesting. I'll look at the chart on that, so it's quite interesting. Okay, what's the next one, Russ?
Slightly more staid situation, relatively speaking. Central Asia Metals. It's an update. You know, we flagged it a few weeks ago, and you know, just ahead of the full year numbers, and the full year numbers have now come out. And again, they were perfectly solid. Again, as a reminder, it's not a miner as such. It's a recycler and processor of waste mining materials at a copper mine in Kazakhstan. So it's pretty low cost, pretty high margin stuff. It's cash generative. And you can see, you know, profits were broadly, you know, revenues were broadly flat. Profits were flat, but with revenues of 67 and profits of 33 million at the operating level, that's pretty high margin stuff. That turns into cash flow, and that's most importantly, turns into dividends. The dividend was hiked 24% to 15.5p. So you got a dividend yield there of more than 6%, which looks pretty decently covered by cash flow and earnings. And that's really the key to the story. I'm sure the shares will, you know, follow the copper price to a degree. Mm-hmm. And that has been quite weak of late. Now you've had the Escondida industrial strife sorted out in Chile. Production profile, well, they did a record 14,000 tonnes last year. They forecast something like 13,000 to 14,000 this year. So, you know, the Kounrad site in Kazakhstan, relatively mature. They're looking at a new project in Chile, though interestingly they haven't greenlit that because they're still working out the economics, which I think is good. So there isn't a blind dash for growth here. The focus is on profits and cash flow, not size. And they have acquired a new site, a copper gold site in northern Kazakhstan, which they're looking to develop over the next 12 to 18 months. So there is a little bit of growth potential there, but really this is one, it's all about cash flow, it's all about cost control, and it's all really about patient dividend accumulation. And for those who feel that way inclined, maybe dividend reinvestments. It looks to be a pretty solid mining income play with obviously the risk on top that the copper price does move around a little bit. But so far, so solid.
Yeah, it did bounce. We talked about it last time. It was falling off a bit of off that high from 260, but it bounced at about £2.10. It's never easy, is it, trying to guess where a bottom is there, because you'd assume about £2, but no, £2.10 or £2.9, a very odd figure there. But at least it's bouncing anyway. And the last one, Russ.
Filter. It's a market newbie. It came to the market last November at 83p a share when it raised £4.3 million, based in Rugby. Although a lot of the bulk of the company's business is actually in the United States, and its area is filtering cooking oil, vacuum cleaning deep fat fryers, and taking away all the nasty stuff that restaurateurs need to get rid of but can't tip down the drain anymore and have to do it in a very health and safety conscious fashion. So there's a big regulatory driver to the business here, you know, filtering cooking oil, taking it away, storing it, and also then there's the cycle of, you know, taking market share and then ultimately riding the restaurant cycle. I mean, they've got it's a part franchise sales, part direct sales. They've got about 180 odd franchises, about 130 odd are in the US, the rest are in the UK. They're looking at moving into Europe, and it just produced its maiden preliminary results on the 3rd of April, which is why it caught my eye. Sales were up 27% to 10 million quid. Operating profit, once you strip out some one-off items, they were broadly flat at 1.1. And, you know, management was pretty upbeat for the year. UK pub chain business win and rollout, entering into Canada, adding US franchises. So you've got profits, you know, forecast of, you know, 1.1 last year, about 2.3 coming up, 2.6 the year after, with sales going from 10 to 12 to 14 million. So on the sounds of it, it's quite exciting. The cash from the IPO still on the balance sheets, that's all fine. I guess there are just two niggles you'd probably have. One, the valuation's quite full, in fairness. You know, you've got a stock. The stock's on sort of 18 times forward earnings with a 1.8% yield. So there is an element of quite aggressive growth already filtered into the factored into the valuation. The other one that just to keep an eye on is the restaurant cycle overall. I can see the health and safety driver to the story. I can see the market share gains to the story because this is, you know, quite a young company. I think if there is going to be a trap for the stock, it's the broader restaurant cycle. You know, we've seen Tasty PLC scale back its restaurant expansion plans this year with Wildwood. Comptoir Group, which does the Comptoir Lebanese restaurant, Lebanese restaurants, yesterday just said they're slowing down their expansion plans because trading's been tough. The Coffee Peach business tracker for restaurants, like-for-like sales in restaurants were pretty weak in March. The US, the Restaurant performance index there has been below 100 for five straight months, which normally means that trading is quite tough. So I'm not saying this is all going to, you know, turn to custard straight away, but as when if times get tough, this is obviously eating out is a pretty, you know, serious discretionary item. It's something that people can cut back on quite quickly. And if lots of restaurant chains feel the heat and start cutting back on expansion plans, that could just take a little bit of, you know, edge off the filter story. But to me, it sounds interesting. The caveats being the valuation and the restaurant cycle. And I think news flow from their end customers, or certainly, you know, the potential end customers, will be a big factor in where the stock goes from here.
Yeah. And so what do they do with the grease and fat? They don't recycle it, do they? Just
they filter it and take it away, and then dispose of it safely. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Marvellous. Okay. Well, one to watch. Thanks for that, Raj. And,
Not at all. Sizzle.
Have a nice weekend. And
have a lovely
weekend.
I look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications. You're all right, Al?
I'm fine, Jess. Yep, I'm just gearing up for Easter. Family all coming down, Easter egg hunts, all the rest of it, you know.
Yeah, it's a long weekend, isn't it? Last day of the trading week and 4 days off until Tuesday. It's nice, though, isn't it?
It's actually really nice to be able to switch off from the market for 4 days in a row. That's really good, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I don't know if I can, though. I mean, I was like cold turkey. I'm shivering by, I'll be shivering by Monday. Come on, switch them back on.
Need the market fix, yeah.
Exactly.
I know what you mean. I'm the same. You know, I say, oh, it's great having the break. But actually, yeah, a couple of days and you start to get a bit twitchy.
Yeah. But even these days, we've got abroad. I find it hard not to go anywhere. I've got to have internet. You know, I can't go for a week away without looking at the market. So it's ridiculous. It's a living thing, I think the market is. Anyway, what are you looking at today, Al? What stocks?
Well, it's a company, it's a former rare earth minerals company called Cadence Minerals.
I've had Kieran on the podcast a couple of times, Kieran Mazaria, indeed. Which is the main guy there, isn't he?
He is indeed, yeah, that's right. Now, this stock has sort of long caught my eye. It's company changed name from Rare Earth Minerals at the end of March and been trading as Cadence Minerals since. Shares have been as high as 0.92p on the year, as low as 0.42. It's currently trading around 0.50p with a market cap of around 40 million sterling. Now, Cadence own interests, and what I like about Cadence is that they're in the rare earth metal sector. They're basically involved in green projects to extract minerals from the earth that will power tomorrow's technology, and it's also green technology as well. So they're sort of extracting lithium and a host of other rare earth minerals. They've got a number of projects. They have a 21% interest in the Sinovec project in Czechoslovakia. They've got the Karabib and MacArthur projects, which are early stage rare earth projects. Also the Anjibana rare earth project in Australia, the Greenland rare earth project. But probably the one that has been highest profile to date is the Sonora lithium project in Mexico. And of course, this is the company Bacanora Minerals, BCN, are primarily involved in this company. What Cadence does, it has interest in all the operating companies that are running these different projects. So there's a very good spread of risk there. And, you know, rather than just having all your eggs in one basket or all your interest in one mine, as it were, they have that they're spread across a number of projects. A very significant step forward for the company this week. We mentioned the Sinovec project in which Cadence has a 21% interest. On Monday, the company announced that they had entered, the Bacanora Minerals had entered into an offtake project with Hanwha Company Limited, which is a Japanese company, a big trader in battery chemicals, with sales of more than 1.5 billion yen in 2016. So this takeoff project is unusual in that globally there are probably a handful of these sort of projects that have actually developed into full takeoff projects. So what that does, it basically gives the project absolute credence and credibility, that it's there is a revenue stream there pretty well mapped out for the company going forward. And what really caught my eye about this is that Cadence has a 30% joint venture with Bacanora, both on the Sonora project and on the Mexilit areas, which are the various other sites within the region. They're set to earn 20% of the mineral ore mined from this area. There's a 20% there's a 20-year life on that particular mine. The net project value is estimated to be some $800 million, and Cadence interest overall in that is some 6% over the period. So their potential value in that one project alone is nearly $50 million. But also it's important to remember that that project valuation was put together when lithium carbonate was selling at $6,500 per ton. That's estimated to rise, and you can look at a lot of the lithium carbonate forecasts out there that are on independent websites, forecast to rise to some $9,500. So potentially that gives it further equity upside. Going back to what I said about Cadence at the start, obviously we know Kieran Mozeria, we know his track record, but this takeoff deal, the importance of that cannot be overstated. It's a big Japanese company's come in. It's got this agreement there, so it's basically put this project well and truly on the map. The revenues are going to be there going forward. So where Cadence currently sits with a market cap of some 40 million sterling at 0.5 OP, really just values that Sonora project by itself, without any of the upside from the Sinovec project, the Yangibana project, the Caribib project, the MacArthur project. So in a sense, I think there's very much a flaw in the share price at the moment. If we look at the chart, and obviously the rare earth metals chart has morphed into the Cadence chart now, you've got the 200-day moving average at 0.58p, which the stock's trading just under at the moment. And I'm looking for the stock to recover that, and I think really, while it's just below that, it's got to offer really, really good value, probably in the near term, as an investment for investors looking to get into rare earth metals, but have a real spread of risk as well.
Yeah, it's a good way of exposing yourself to those minerals, you know, that sort of power tomorrow's needs, I suppose, and because they're very clever. I was talking to Kieran, and they're very clever exposed to different parts of the development curve, you know. So some of these, like I said, some of them are more advanced and some of them are early stage exploration.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's saying to me, you've got to do that because, and I think, I can't remember the exact figure, but he said it's like 2 or 3%, that's all, of exploration goes through to production. So, even though you can see, if one of those does go through, you know, enormous upside potential, but very few and far between. So, they've spread themselves across that risk, you know.
Yeah. I mean, with these projects, you've got the different variables that come into play. You know, the cost, or the cost in the region, the cost of living in the region, what your wage bill is going to be like, the extraction costs, actually getting the stuff out of the ground, getting it to market. Are there good transport links nearby? All of those factors come into play. And as Kieran rightly says, you know, very few of them actually make it to full production. But Sonora clearly, this is with that takeoff arrangement with Hanwha. With Hanwha going forward, it absolutely puts the project on the map. It's going to be a major source of lithium going forward, and with the spread of other projects that the company is involved in, clearly they expect others to come online too. And don't forget, as Kieran said, 2% of them actually come off in the longer term. Kieran's job is basically traveling the world, looking at all these different projects and forming those assessments. And he's got a good track record of doing that with the company to date. And clearly he'll have had a lot of wasted journeys too. He'll have traveled to sites and he'll have traveled to projects and struck them off as for various reasons as being too expensive or too impractical, so on and so forth. But, this is where Cadence is. I think there's a really good floor in the price now. And as I say, with the 200-day moving average just about where we are now, I think the only way from here is up.
Marvellous. Anything else, Al?
Well, that's it today. Just to say, that's, of course...
Well, that was comprehensive, I think. So, yeah, good to say what? Go on.
Well, just to say, of course, we spoke about Feedback PLC last week. That's the company with the medical imaging software, TexRad. It's had a stellar week, and clearly with the company valued at some 8 to 10 million now, its peer group valued around $50-60 million on average. There's still, I think, a lot more upside to come from there too. And of course, in May, With Feedback BLC, we expect to hear about the CE mark for the TexRad lung application, which will be another big step forward for the company.
Marvellous, Al. Have a nice weekend. So have a nice Easter there. And I've still got man flu, by the way. So, you know, I don't know if I'll still be here this time next week. Hopefully, maybe I'll be gone, or I'll be gone. Who knows? But until then, Al, speak next week. Have a nice weekend, fella.
Have a great Easter, Jess. Cheers. Bye for now.
Okay, it's time for top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Andlas Energy and Power, it's ADL. At 4, Asia Met Resources, ARS. At 3, 88 Energy, it's ADD. At 2, Sirius Petroleum, SRSP. And number 1, spoke to Colin earlier on the podcast, Ascent Resources, the most followed company on Vox Markets. And again, most followed in the last 24 hours. Wow. Okay, top five most liked RNSs, and no guesses for who wins this. At 5, Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR, non-executive director appointment. At 4, Onzima Ventures, proposed acquisition and capital raising. At 3, Sirius Petroleum. Are you serious? Yes. SRSP, offshore service vessels contract. I spoke to Bobo earlier. At 2, it was in yesterday afternoon, Talao Energy, IPC partnership with Africa Investment Management. And number 1, most liked RNS on Vox Markets of all time, it's in triple digits, Ascent Resources, First Gas. Okay, who to follow on Vox Markets? I spoke to Joe Andretti, CEO of White Cells, earlier on, and he's on Vox Markets, and he's quite active on there, so I think worth hitting up, because, like I said, a very cutting-edge, innovative business they have there, and it could be huge, you know? It's one of these things that you should keep your eye on, just keep a watch on. And ask Joe, if you have any questions about how it works, stem cells and all that, and storage, and the cell plan, and also Wide Academy, then hit him up with a few questions on Vox. And just, in fact, click the link. His name is J-O-A-O Andretti. So if you search for it, Joe, he will be there somewhere. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.